Today's episode is a conversation between one of our most brilliant climate scientists here at UCS and one of Hollywood's most thoughtful environmentalists. We met up in Santa Monica to talk about how we approach some of Earth's most pressing issues using science, the arts, and a whole lot of humanity. I'm your host, Jess Phoenix, and this is Science. I have a very exciting episode for you today. This is Science Fans. I'm joined by not one, but two exceptional people from very different sides of the climate solutions equation. Dr. Brenda Eckwurzel is a multidisciplinary climate scientist whose work has taken her everywhere from the frigid Arctic to the arid deserts of the American Southwest. She was named a fellow of the American Academy for the Advancement of Science in 2016, and she currently serves as the Director of Scientific Excellence for the Union of Concerned Scientists. Clearly, science is what gets Brenda out of bed in the morning. In addition to this scientific rock star, I'd also like to welcome Eric Balfour.
Are you actually going to try to give me an introduction after that?
Yes, you get one, whether or not you want it.
Yeah,
so, despite his modesty, if Eric looks familiar to you, it's probably because you've seen him on screen in 24, The OC, full disclosure, I totally watched The OC in college, Haven, and many more, as well as movies, et cetera, et cetera. You've seen him before, I guarantee it. And if you're roughly my age, you may have also seen him in Kids Incorporated. So Eric is passionate about conservation. And in particular, I admire your dedication to ocean conservation work. And I wanted to thank you both for being here. So Brenda, I was wondering if you could start us off with explaining how you fell in love with earth science.
Wow. Essentially, I'd have to say it started with college and experiential learning. I just fell in love with the professor who took us out on field trips and showed us all sorts of things. I had no idea that basically the land we stand on has such history and is also archived in the ocean, and that mountains are formed. And so it gives you the sense that the deep past history of time means that what is today may not be existing in the future.
That's a really good way of putting it. And I had a similar experience. It's the geologists in us. So Eric, I know you grew up in the LA area. So you've been here a while. You've seen some things. What sparked your love for the natural world?
Well, you know, interestingly enough, it actually started as a child because my family grew up around Native American ceremonies and Native American culture. And part of what is my, you know, in essence, my spiritual religion, if you were, I mean, my mother's Jewish and I also grew up these Native American ceremonies. All of my life, there was this connection to the earth and the world that we touch. And then on top of that, I grew up a beach kid. I was a surfer. I loved the ocean. And really, as soon as I was able to be old enough to be cognizant of what I was seeing around me, you started seeing the change. You started seeing plastic and trash on the beaches, in the sand. And you just inherently knew there was something wrong happening. And when you started seeing it in the water, it wasn't always that way. Even from my youth, and not to be catastrophic or nihilistic about the future, but the fact that we don't get up every day in a bit of a panic about what the world will look like for our children, because now I'm thinking about it. I'm only, you know, 10, 20 years away from my children being adults who are going to live in this world and want to go do things that they may not be able to do that we're doing right now. And the idea of these children that I love and I care for every day living in a world that is unlivable, it's sort of hard not to
want to do something. So.
This is why I invited you on, because I know you care about this. It's like you both come at the caring from a slightly different angle, but there's a really strong shared core here of this wonder about our planet. And I wanted to ask what you each find most compelling these days when you see nature in the news. What's really kind of stuck out to you recently?
Being a surfer, you know, I look at what's happening with tides and beach erosion. Tides that are starting to overflow into our infrastructure in cities. Those are the things I notice a lot. But I also, on a more positive note, I'm seeing things like Ocean Project and some of these ideas that are starting to be implemented and the possibility that, wait, maybe there's some hope. And again, I turn to you guys and go, is it possible? Is there any positive news here? I hope.
I guess what I would say is I was measuring atmospheric rivers of the past in California. I won't date myself how long ago. Measuring wildfires that would burn for a month and then the monsoon rains, North America monsoon rains would put it out, even though firefighters were expending a lot of money and energy and time and risking their lives in the mountains of just in the Tucson area of Arizona. And we were studying with isotopic tracers the post-wildfire runoff. Looking at the scale of these type of extreme events, we knew they would increase. We knew from the data, we knew with climate change, seeing it make headlines now and that more people are waking up to this. What we were studying and people weren't paying attention, we were getting grants for, and it was sitting in journal articles, it's now the daily headlines around the world, really. And that gives me hope because it can't just be scientists warning about this. It can't just be scientists just thinking about the solutions they come up with. It really is going to involve all of us in an international, multi-generational conversation. And that gives me a lot of hope because more people are weighing in and coming up with great ideas. And that's where innovation really happens.
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
The term atmospheric river, is this a term you've been using for a long time that we are just as the public learning about? Or is this a new phrase?
I would say that I have been around many scientists who have been studying many things. And when you look at the data, a lot of times we've gone to our communication colleagues and said, how would you talk about this? For example, ocean currents. The person who helped come up with the term global ocean conveyor belt, really everyone could picture this. And it helps describe in a more tangible way to our everyday experience.
I mean, we are definitely learning how to message things kind of as we go. We have to bridge that communication gap. I want to shift tacks just a little bit. We got to go a little ominous and then we'll pull back from the ominous and go encouraging. But we are in an election year yet again, in a time when politics is normal. It ceased to exist. We are not in any charted territory now. So I wanted each of you to give us a window into what you're seeing from your particular peers and colleagues, so in your respective industries, when it comes to how the people that you're surrounded by are taking action or they're working to prioritize the environment at the ballot box. So what are you seeing from the folks you know the best?
I would say that one opportunity that people may not be as aware of, because again, communication, the Inflation Reduction Act has a lot of climate opportunities within it, a huge down payment on reducing U.S. emissions. And that's going to happen at the local and regional scale. And therefore, who is voted into office will be deciding over the term of their political term, very important decisions about infrastructure projects at the local scale and investing. And that is something I think the local elections are going to really make a big deal on how big our down payment is going to be. So the local elections, I think, are going to matter very much.
I don't want to be a Debbie Downer.
No, it's okay. I want the truth.
So what I am seeing concerns me incredibly. From an take the entertainment world, community, musicians, actors, that world. We have this huge backlash where people are almost afraid to engage politically. It's become almost a faux pas. Like, people are like, we're tired of hearing actors and musicians talk about their politics. Stay in your lane. You know, we don't want to hear it. And at one point, people were like, wait a minute. It's my country too, my world. Let me. And then they started seeing that affect their bank account, I think, on some level, or their posterity, or their the sort of cancel culture nature of it. And people were like, I'm not really going to talk about politics. I'm not going to talk about, you know, like, I'll talk about, environmental issues, but if you're not willing to talk about the politics of those issues, you're not really seeing it to its final conclusion. Add on top of that, you know, there are huge social disparities between even, you know, liberals and progressives now because of what's happening in Israel and in Gaza. So people who generally would be very aligned and on the same page are sort of now divided. And you're hearing people, you know, say things about, you know, whether it's voting for Biden or voting, you know, Democrat locally, that they're sort of, in my opinion, blinded and a little misguided by the sort of TikTok, you know, nature of what they're hearing. And they're just not seeing the forest through the trees.
Being aware of things like that is really important. So then, kind of on the flip side, what has sort of lifted your spirits? And since, Eric, you had more of a downer kind of thing, what's lifted your spirits recently when it comes to climate crisis activism?
Well, I mean, what has lifted my spirits is actually seeing some of the positive things that the Biden administration is currently doing. I think, again, we have a long way to go, but seeing that there are things that are being proposed, that we actually have an administration who is listening to scientists and interested in what scientists have to say.
So, Brenda, anything in particular? I mean, you did say you've been encouraged by the fact that we had the Inflation Reduction Act, which has so much in it that is positive. Anything else that's really been kind of putting some pep in your step when you go to work?
Well, because that is happening, and again, the fact that it just passed, our clean transportation program colleagues are really excited because it's not specifically about EVs. It's that it has standards for emissions. However you want to do it, the free market economy and everything else within a regulated economy, that however you get there, we know probably it's going to involve a huge amount of EVs. And it's up to us as society to figure out where are the guardrails, where are our red lines, and where do we need to pull people in aligned ways. And we're going to have some bumps along the way. And what I see is that tug and pull is happening vigorously. And many people are thinking of solutions that back of the envelope probably are not the best ideas. However, outcompete those. I mean, come up with better ideas, because if you don't come up with a better idea, it's very hard to regulate or stop someone who has an idea is running with it. And sometimes that pulls people in a new direction. And that actually, watching these changes over the years, have happened faster than I would say Congress. Yeah. And usually Congress responds to when the innovation is proving itself, because guess what? It's already been proven we can get there. And we're comfortable with that. And when we have a standard, usually people try to make it and they usually overshoot it and say, let's go deeper. So that's usually the pattern. And the fact that we really have something on the books, I'm so excited as a climate scientist. Finally, there's something real.
That's great. And I like seeing you get excited about it. Good job being a model for scientific excitement. But I did want to ask, how have you seen the way scientists engage with activists? How has that changed over the course of your career?
Really great question. In the beginning, I would say that when I literally reached my personal red line saying, I cannot publish one more paper that's talking about the problem when no one is doing anything, as far as I could tell. So I joined the Union of Concerned Scientists to really learn the other areas of how can our science be much more practical and understandable for an advocacy organization that can get that in the hands of decision makers in ways that they most understand. And we learned that use informed science, really, we are sitting on the data and we can give you different slices that matter to a dairy farmer or matter to maybe someone who's trying to figure out why do we have to rely on lithium for energy? If we keep investing in the federal infrastructure, the corporate research and development, and ideas all around the world, people have many ideas. So that is something that I would say more scientists are learning in the climate field, creating studies that are more use-informed science, working with communities that are frontline communities that are dealing with the impacts of climate change first and worst. And so that shift is very powerful, because then the science that's being done is much more user-friendly and practical.
And kind of a follow-on from that, Eric, I wanted to know what you think that scientists can do to help mobilize people in Hollywood to use evidence-based, climate-friendly business practices. Because, I mean, Hollywood does, it generates a lot of wealth, but it also consumes a lot of resources.
Yeah. And I sit across two industries that, you know, are not the most environmentally friendly, being Hollywood and fashion. So it's an issue that we face all the time. But I will say, there isn't a nature to Hollywood and to the artists around it that do want to do right. You see a lot of things on sets, especially in Canada. You can't go on a set that doesn't have composting, you know, recycling, you know, cans and placements, and we're seeing it, you know, little things, you know, even down to, like, there used to be a time when those little plastic water bottles were everywhere on movie sets and television sets. And it got to the point where when you saw them, you were like, that's offensive. And now you're seeing, you know, you're seeing productions, you know, the beginning of production, they'll gift the crew all water bottles. But what I think for me that scientists can maybe do to help Hollywood is, again, figure out how to make it a revenue source. You know, how does, you know, the environmental impact of what they're doing, you know, make it better, cheaper, faster to create what they're creating? You know, what are the options, like, you know, where can solar be used on sets to, you know, help power base camps and trucks? And, you know, if you're not having to, you know, drive, because lots of television movie productions, one of the biggest costs of those productions is the movement. You know, it's one thing when you're on a soundstage, that's fine. But when you're shooting an epic, you know, thing, Mission Impossible, and it's going, you know, across 15 different countries or 10 different countries, and, you know, you've got 200 or 300 people that you're moving around the world, well, convincing them that, well, the reason that truck is so expensive to move all your equipment is because of the gas, my opinion is we haven't reached an altruistic enough place that people are simply going like, hey, this is the right thing to do. I still think we have to incentivize their core needs, which are not, you know, wholly nefarious. I mean, like, wanting to make money to provide for your family and have a good life. I mean, they're not, you know, just money hungry people going like, I just want to, you know, be as rich as I can. So I think, you know, that is, you know, figuring out how to help Hollywood do it in a more economic way that is more environmentally friendly. There's a lot of waste on those sets, and there are ways to make it more efficient. So that would be the thing that I would think science can help them the most.
Now, to kind of turn the Hollywood and science thing on its head. So, Brenda, we know that films like Don't Look Up have attempted to engage the public about climate change. And then Oppenheimer kind of engages with science and politics in a certain way. But, you know, these have varying degrees of success. So what would you like to see Hollywood do more of as a media consumer and as a scientist?
Well, it's really interesting because some of the things that people may not realize that the costs of renewables are cheaper than fossil fuels. The challenge is the infrastructure that makes it accessible and having that in your remote location or things like that. Whereas the military is very concerned about getting off fossil fuels because the amount of money they have to spend on it in remote locations, renewables are usually the best source. So what I would love to see is not just dystopian stories about the future. People don't want to usually walk out feeling like the world's going to blow up. It's not. The planet's going to be here. It's more about saving ourselves and our fellow living creatures on this planet, that they have more habitable zones than what we're on track to be leaving them and ourselves. For example, if you want to have a peppy race scene, you should use an EV because it has 90% efficiency in it. That power goes, you're off the blocks, and have it race against the ICE car, the internal combustion engine, and just show that delay and that rumbling, and it just can't keep up. right? I mean, just show the difference. Just literally show the difference and have fun with it.
I mean, I would love to see a Tesla, something fully electric, just smoke your Chevy Camaro.
Yeah, it's literally impossible to beat an electric with a nice car at the beginning, you know.
I just got my first Rivian. I got a Rivian truck. Yeah. And it's so fun pulling up next to guys in like Porsches and whatevers, because I'm like, I'm going to smoke you. Yeah. And it's sort of fun too.
And so just incorporating it into the story in a subtle way, because let's face it, we already have this level of climate change and people don't want to talk about it. And yet we're on track to accelerate even further. So we're not even talking about today's level of climate change. And so it's in our lives. It's all around the world. And yet we don't talk about it. And yet, who are the best storytellers? I have to say, right here, just down the road from where we are, amazing storytelling. I'm a fan.
I have like a kind of a pie in the sky question for you both. So if I told you that I could guarantee that every single American would hear one thing about the environment or climate that's really important, and that thing would get to every single American in the country, what would that be?
I mean, mine would be really simple. It would be simply, you have to stop using single-use plastics.
So fundamental. I was thinking about that the other day because I went to put something in my fridge, and it was something that would have gone well in a plastic baggie. And I was thinking, well, how did they sell strawberries and blueberries in the grocery store? I mean, they've always been in plastic since I was a kid. So then I'm like, oh, wow, when did all this plastic invade our everyday lives? And what would we do without it? It's a good one. Brenda?
I think the main thing is to talk about what your favorite solution is and how it's affecting your life and what you love about it. Because a lot of people think some of these solutions are scary, and it's scary to change what we've known. And a lot of times I share my solutions with people wherever I go. And it's amazing because people are curious. They really want to know. And you who have experienced one of those solutions, tell about it. And I love that when the power goes out in my neighborhood, my solar panels and the power walls are keeping the lights on. I love when people come over and ask about my AV. It's just a whole different level of conversation. So what I would do is ask your local leaders, what are they doing to help communities? Because the money's flowing, this Inflation Reduction Act, all these programs that are happening locally, seize them now. Say, what are you doing for this community? How are you changing? How are you going to be role models? Well, what are you doing with the government buildings? Why are you not taking advantage of this?
So actually, what you said about all your conservation activities, I literally have my next question. What's your personal favorite conservation activity? So I'll let Eric go first on this one, though, because I know you've engaged in a lot of different conservation activities.
I mean, my favorite is a beach cleanup. You know, it's something that I can take my children to do. They can see the impact of it. They can also see the consequence of what is happening. Even my 5.5-year-old, you know, it's very clear. He can see that this trash shouldn't be here and how much, even, you know, how much nicer it looks when it's gone. And it's very simple for him to understand. So for me, it's a beach cleanup.
Yeah. I mean, it's very tangible. Yeah. And it's beautiful. You're at a beach.
Yeah.
Okay, Brenda.
It's been this choice for a long period. I chose to continue sharing my energy and skills with Union of Concerned Scientists because I get to work with colleagues who know better than I, as a scientist, how to reduce the emissions that really will lift ecosystems around the world, people who are struggling to deal with the ravages of climate change of today. And so that's my favorite activity.
So there is a signature sort of question I ask people at the end of this. And the funny thing is you've all used the word several times and it's literally in the name of the org. I always ask people, and it is a two-parter though. I've changed it. It's not just one. So the first part, which I will give you, is again, we're at UCS, Union of Concerned Scientists. Why are you concerned? And I'd like Brenda to go first this time.
I'm concerned because I know people around the world are experiencing the consequences of climate change, and the more we talk about it, I think the more we'll be able to converge on helping each other. A lot of the solutions to climate change are actually challenges we as a human species have been dealing with for eons. And so working to help all those issues will help us figure out better ways to work together so we can help realize we really are on this one blue marble. And it really is 70% ocean. So the ocean's everything. And the more we talk about how precious this is for ourselves, we can maybe, that gives me the biggest concern is when we spend so much time attacking each other. That gives me great concern.
And so, Eric, why are you concerned?
I mean, I sort of alluded to this when we first started talking, but for me, it is, you know, very personally, my children. But also, you know, as a parent now, having small children, there's a weird sense every child kind of becomes yours a little bit. And so you start to feel that concern about children everywhere who are dealing with famine, heat, water shortages. They didn't ask to be here. The idea that we don't have the greatest responsibility and debt to them, for me, that's what concerns me.
The second part of the question is, and we'll kick it back to you, what are you doing about that concern?
The biggest thing that I would say I honestly am doing is trying to live by example. Think globally, act locally is really the best piece of advice that anyone ever gave me, because there are so many problems to solve. Which one is the one you're going to take on? For me, I live by the ocean. I live by the beach. For me, I think it's leading by example and leading for my children to say, like, hey, we don't buy these type of things and we don't just throw this out, or we go here and we do this and we clean up our beach. When we go to the beach, you bring a bag. We, you know, when we set up our blanket and our things, we walk around, we clean up for 10 minutes before we lay down, and we get our surfboards out, we do our thing. We do a little, you know, that's just something we do every time we go.
That's great. And Brenda, what are you doing about your concern?
Well, because I am concerned, I really follow the spheres of influence where you have the most impact is yourself, your spheres of influence, that your community, who you interact with most with. That's where I focus on making sure I'm doing that as well as I possibly can and show up in the best way. And that has ripple effects, because each person has their spheres of influence. And it really, instead of thinking halfway around the world and all those other things, the other thing is, because I know that historically the U.S. has contributed the most cumulative, if you do country level emissions, to the problem of climate change, I'm very glad that I'm here in the United States working on this issue, because I think it will have a big impact when the U.S. really is changing. And this is a big down payment, this Inflation Reduction Act. If we do it well, it could really make a difference for the whole world.
Big thanks to Brenda and Eric for making this episode happen and for showing us how we all can fight for our planet and our future every single day. Thanks, as always, to Anthony Eyring and Omari Spears for production help. And don't forget, every day is Earth Day, science devotees.